From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the fourth day of October 2016. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson. He's at L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana. And a bit later in the program, Harry Cooney will be here from GrowMark out of Bloomington, Illinois, to take a look at the agricultural energies. Along the way, we'll check in on the Ag News for the afternoon and hear from the state statisticians in Illinois, Iowa, Minnesota, and Indiana. Four of the top five corn-producing states in the nation. On this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media, do find us online on demand anytime you'd like at WILLAG.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
The numbers in Chicago finished a bit higher for the corn pit today. December contract up 2 1/4, $3.48 1/4. The March at $3.58 1/4, up 2.5. And next year's December, $3.87, 2 3/4 higher. November beans were down 9.5 cents at $9.63 1/2. January, $9.69 1/4, 8 3/4 lower. The March down 8.5 at $9.76. And next year's November beans at $9.66 3/4, 4 3/4 cents lower. December soft red winter wheat unchanged at $3.95 1/2. July at $4.41 down 1/4. And the hard red July down 3 3/4 at $4.40 3/4 cents. Live cattle futures finished the December and the October higher, both up about $2.40 to $2.80. That December at $102.40 and the feeder cattle in the October at $127.70, $3.72 1/2 cents higher. November up $4.30 at $123.57 1/2. October lean hogs $48.65 down 27.5 cents. Now we're joined by Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana, to take a look at the marketplace. Good afternoon to you, Wayne.
Well, good afternoon, Todd.
Well, we've had a little turnaround Tuesday today. Tell me about the marketplace and how trade happened.
Well, I think, you know, we continued to see the corn build on their technical turnaround from Friday and yesterday's continuation of it, and further continuation today, and breaking through the yesterday's high and closing higher for the third day in a row on the corn. The beans seem to take a little bit of offense to the FC Stones raising the yields up a little bit, increasing, if you would actually figure that out, about 100 million bushel in the carryout, if it does come to fruition of what they're saying there, and the idea that the yields out of the field have been looking pretty good too. Also, oil was down and meal took a little step backwards today too, Todd.
Were you impressed that wheat was able to hang on to its gains or at least stay unchanged for the day?
I think that the wheat has just, you know, it's been the poor sister out there. We've got so much feed wheat in the world. It is helping that Egypt did relax their ergot restrictions, and we did see a couple of tenders that were accepted on that and another one out there. So that helps and along the way. So, you know, we are glad to see, you know, corn can't stay strong if wheat stays really weak, that's for sure.
Next Wednesday, the United States Department of Agriculture will update its weekly or its monthly world agricultural supply demand estimates along with the crop production figures. That's one of the reasons the FC Stone numbers were out. What are your expectations?
Well, I think there's a real good chance they're going to raise the acreages in the corn but drop the yield and probably things pretty close to the same. You know, the big question is, what sort of number are they going to throw with the beans? Is it going to be where they were at, or will they raise it 1 or 2 bushels like Stone and maybe Informa will tell us tomorrow, because I think they'll probably come with a higher number too. But that's going to be the big thing, because it is a very important difference if you up the carryout 50% by increasing that bean number.
So are you of a mind that this really can happen? I know FC Stone has a big number, but the number we have for soybeans is already substantially above the trend line. How much farther can USDA push it?
I don't think that they'll push over a 51 or a 52 on this one. If they do push that, they might not even push any at all, just looking at how things are. The idea that, you know, the early yields have been good. We continue to hear some agronomists in some areas say that the later beans maybe not might not be quite as good. But, you know, there's just enough. They've done tremendous so far. And we haven't heard any bad soybean yields from anybody. You know, we've heard not as good as my neighbors, but they're still very, very good yields for an average year. So, and we've heard a lot of mid-60s to mid-70s, at least in our area over here. So, you know, the bean yields have been very, very, very good.
So farmers have been lagging just a bit behind in their soybean harvest. The corn harvest moving along, not at a terrible rate in Illinois. I think 45% done at this point. When will we begin to, as I was thinking about that, I'm wondering if you believe that the corn number has bottomed at this point, and if so, what kind of upside potential might there be?
Well, you know, if you look technically we have bottomed. We've made a higher high, a lower low, and a higher close for the last 3 days in a row. We broke through the resistance at 47 and three quarters. We closed at 48 and a quarter today. So technically, it looks like we bottomed. But, you know, we've got next week's report to go through, and we generally don't bottom before that report and see what that number is. So, you know, the first 10 days of October generally is when a seasonal low is put in, and you know, a lot of harvest to go, but it does look technically like there's a good chance that the bottom is in.
And fundamentally, can you put that in your mind and make it work?
Fundamentally, I have a lot of problems making it work when we're only 26% done with harvest and flying along, and the kind of yields that we're talking about, that 175, and thinking that it's going to be in that way. So, you know, we're probably looking for a little bit of setback before we take off. You know, but the charts do project upwards. Now, can they really go there? Some of the wild Fibonacci numbers say as high as 420.
All right. Well, we'll take a look at those, and we'll talk more on Thursday when we get hold of Dan Zwicker and see where he thinks we are technically, too. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Doug.
That's Wayne Nelson. He's with L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report for this Tuesday afternoon. In today's agricultural news, the United States Environmental Protection Agency is talking about ethanol again. The EPA floated a few tweaks yesterday that would adjust how the renewable fuel standard treats blends with between 16 and 83% ethanol, sparing them from certain safety requirements, but it did nothing for E15, which producers are counting on to help push more ethanol into the fuel system. Ethanol groups like Growth Energy have been calling on EPA to eliminate safety rules that make it hard to sell E15 at certain times of year when the fuel is more volatile, and they worry the agency is not listening. If this proposed rule is finalized, this regulation would leave E15 as the only ethanol-blended fuel that does not have reed vapor pressure or RVP relief, said Emily Score. She's CEO of Growth Energy. She says it's imperative E15 be given the same volatility treatment as regular E10 gasoline. Well, let's stay in Washington, D.C., but we'll move to trade talks. The Obama administration is continuing its tough-on-trade message by requesting an October 14 special session of the World Trade Organization's dispute settlement body to press for rapid enforcements of rulings that faulted trade practices in the EU and India. We need to resolve these disputes once and for all, says the U.S. Trade Representative. The Obama administration, he says, is strongly committed to enforcing the rights of the United States under a trade agreement, and we will use every tool at our disposal to expedite these cases for the benefit of American businesses and workers. At the meeting, the U.S. will press the EU to adopt a ruling in September that found the EU failed to comply with a previous ruling, faulting it for providing illegal substances to aircraft giant Airbus. Another focus of the session will be India's adoption of a September WTO ruling that upheld a previous challenge of New Delhi's domestic content requirements for equipment used in its major solar power initiative. Now let's move on to TPP. Hillary Clinton kept up her attack on the Trans-Pacific Partnership in a speech yesterday in Toledo, Ohio, repeating that she opposes TPP now and in the future because it is one-sided and unfair to American workers, unquote. The Democratic nominee didn't go into an extended critique of the agreement, but criticized investor-state dispute settlement provisions that she said favor large corporations over everyone else. Now, the Treasury Department is proposing new rules that could sharply increase producers' estate tax burden, but agricultural groups and lawmakers are fighting back. Treasury wants to hike the value of producers' farm and ranch assets by reducing discounts for certain ownership, making it harder to qualify for estate tax exclusion. 41 Senate Republicans and key farm groups, including the American Farm Bureau Federation and the National Cattlemen's Beef Association, want the Treasury to abandon the proposed regulation. They charge the plan eliminates estate tax relief Congress passed back in 2012 and discourages families from passing on the farm to future generations. NCBA, Farm Bureau, and other business groups that are part of the Family Business Estate Tax Coalition wrote Treasury to withdraw the proposed rule, says Danielle Beck. She's with the National Cattlemen's Beef Association.
We had more than 3,700 signatures on that letter from family businesses across the U.S., which is an excellent turnout. It was the largest letter that the National Association of Manufacturers have ever hosted, and probably one of the largest I've seen in my time in D.C.
Beck says the group wants to head off an estate tax change before President Obama leaves office.
The earliest that this regulation could be finalized and effective is in early 2017. If we have a Democratic candidate take office next year and this goes through, the estate tax is just going to be so much more burdensome for our family.
Hillary Clinton wants to reduce the estate tax exemption from more than $5 million down to $3.5 million and raise the tax rate to 45% from 40% she charges. Donald Trump's tax plan, including the estate tax, favors the rich. And finally today, we'll go overseas where China may soon impose measures to protect its soybean industry based on remarks from a leading figure in the country's agricultural production sector. A trade official at China's agricultural ministry said it might be necessary to introduce anti-dumping tariffs and other measures to curb imports and protect domestic production. Trade officials in China have long talked about protecting China's agricultural industries, both to ensure food security and to alleviate poverty, which is most prominent in China's rural areas. However, one industry contact questioned the potential moves, questioning they want to protect their domestic industry and their consumers, noting that import protection leads to higher prices. The sources said the talk sounds more like jawboning prices down further. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Yesterday afternoon, the United States Department of Agriculture released the weekly crop progress report. It shows that 86% of the corn crop around the nation has matured. That's about 7 points ahead of the rolling five-year average. 24% of that crop has now been harvested. The rolling five-year average is 27%. The farmers in Iowa are a bit behind on their corn harvest, by the way. We'll hear about that in a moment. Their corn harvest now 10% complete. Usually at this time, they're nearly 19% complete. Soybeans dropping leaves set at 83%. The rolling five-year average is 79%. 26% of that crop has been harvested around the nation. The normal is 27%. It's the Illinois farmers are the ones running behind here, 16% this year, compared to 23% on the rolling five-year average. Now, let's hear really how things are going. In the Midwest, we'll hear from statisticians in Indiana and Minnesota, Illinois, and Iowa.
This is Doug Hartwig, Deputy Director for USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service Upper Midwest Region. Warmer and drier weather allowed Iowa farmers 5.4 days suitable for fieldwork for the week ending October 2, 2016. While harvest was starting to gain momentum, there were many reports of muddy conditions and standing water in some fields. Fieldwork activities for the week included cutting hay and harvesting corn and soybeans and fall tillage. 88% of the corn crop was mature, 2 days ahead of last year and 4 days ahead of the five-year average. 10% of the corn crop for grain has been harvested, 1 day behind last year and 9 days behind the average. The corn condition was rated with 81% in good to excellent condition. 96% of soybeans were turning color or beyond, equal to both last year and the average. 85% of the soybeans were dropping leaves, 4 days ahead of average. 21% of the soybean crop has been harvested, 1 day behind last year's pace. Soybean condition was rated with 81% good to excellent. That is the Iowa Weekly Crop Progress and Condition Report for the week ending October 2, 2016. I'm Doug Hartwig, Deputy Director for USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service, Upper Midwest Region.
This is Mark Schleusener, State Statistician for Illinois, with the USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service. Harvest activities continued across Illinois last week, with interruptions from rain in some areas. Northwestern, western, and central parts of the state had below-average rainfall for the week, while the rest of the state was near normal or above normal precipitation. Corn harvest advanced 19 points and is now 43% complete, compared to 38% for the five-year average. The condition of the crop was rated 4% very poor to poor, 14% fair, and 82% good to excellent, slightly below 1 week ago. Soybean harvest reached 16% complete, 7 points behind normal pace, and 80% of acres are dropping leaves, 1 point ahead of normal. The condition of the soybean crop is now rated 5% very poor to poor, 15% fair, 56% good, and 24% excellent, slightly better than 1 week ago. In other crops, 30% of sorghum acres have been harvested, and 70% of acres are mature, while winter wheat planting advanced 5 points and is now 6% complete. This has been Mark Schleusener with the Illinois Field Office of the USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service in Springfield.
This is Dan Loftus, State Statistician for the USDA NAS Minnesota Field Office. Drier weather allowed Minnesota farmers to harvest over a quarter of the soybean crop during the week. While the drier weather allowed harvest activities to pick up, there were reports of fields still too wet to harvest. There were reports of white mold in soybeans and concerns about corn stalk quality. Field activities for the week included harvesting and tilling. 87% of the Minnesota corn crop acreage was mature. That's 8 days ahead of the five-year average and slightly ahead of last year. 8% of the corn for grain acreage was harvested. That's about a week behind average. Corn condition rated 85% good to excellent. 92% of the corn for silage acres had been harvested. With nearly all the soybean crop dropping leaves or beyond, 40% of the soybean acreage was harvested. That's slightly behind average and 4 days behind last year. Soybean condition rated 82% good to excellent, which is up 3 percentage points from last week. 22% of the sunflower acreage was harvested. That's 3 days ahead of average. The sunflower condition rated 58% good to excellent. For the USDA NAS Minnesota Field Office, this is Dan Loftus.
This is Jessica Lemonager with the Great Lakes Regional Office of the National Agricultural Statistics Service with the Indiana Crop and Weather Report. Frequent rain showers slowed harvest progress and kept grain moisture high. Corn matured was 87% complete compared to 79% last year and 76% five-year average. Corn harvested for grain was 24% complete compared to 26% last year and 21% five-year average. Diplodia ear rot, stalk rot, and various mold pressures remain high in cornfields given the wet conditions and cooler temperatures. Much of the harvested grain has to be dried due to high moisture. Soybeans dropping leaves was 82% complete compared to 87% last year and 84% five-year average. Soybeans harvested was 15% complete compared to 36% last year and 20% five-year average. Soybean harvest continues to fall behind last year and the five-year average with no help from the rain. Some growers reported that the plant defoliation process has slowed down from the rainy weather, contributing to the slow harvest pace for beans. Some farmers attempted to cut and bale hay this week despite the suboptimal conditions. Few wheat fields were planted last week. When the weather permitted, farmers harvested tomatoes, potatoes, and seed corn. That concludes this week's Indiana Crop and Weather Report. This is Jessica Lemonager reporting.
All right, thanks to the state statisticians for their update of the weekly crop progress reports. Now let's turn our attention to the agricultural energies. Harry Cooney is here. He's from GrowMark in Bloomington, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Harry.
Well, good afternoon, Todd. Beautiful day out there today for harvest.
Yeah, it is a fantastic day to harvest. However, that's in the Midwest. If you're on the East Coast, there are probably some things you need to be concerned about, and I'm wondering what that means for the energy sector as Hurricane Matthew heads into their range.
Well, that's exactly right. Coming up from the from the east of Florida there up the east coast. It seemed like it might have had an impact to help firm up the gasoline futures market a little bit today. Now, the market only closed up 3 cents, so it's no big deal here, at least of yet. And it doesn't look like, at least right now, that the hurricane is going to make a landfall. It looks like it's going to more of just kind of hug the coast. So it's yet to be seen if it causes many refinery outages. Probably more likely it could cause some power outages, which could cause some refinery disruptions and things. But that's probably about the most that we would hear, unless it starts turning and coming straight in, and you know, then it could do some damage. But for right now, it looks like it's going to kind of stay out to sea and just kind of hug the coast.
How's fuel demand been in the Midwest?
Well, fuel demand has been good. Fuel demand with harvest going, a big crop. It takes a lot of gallons of fuel to get a big crop harvested and then get it all moved around. So diesel fuel demand is good. Propane demand is actually running through across the Midwest throughout our system. Propane demand is actually running a little ahead of last year. Now, in some respects, that's not saying too much because last year's demand was a little weaker, but we're liking the trend at least. Even though we hear of a lot of corn under 20% moisture, our numbers show that we're actually running a little bit ahead of last year at this time for the season-to-date demand of propane. So there's some bright signs here what's looking to be a fairly large harvest for quite a few people.
So would much of that demand come out of Minnesota? They've been running ahead, and they tend to dry their crop.
Well, when I say our numbers are running a little ahead, it's across the entire system map, and so that's across the entire Midwest and out into the East Coast, and so it's a pretty broad spectrum. It's not just in one area, but of course Minnesota's a part of it, of course, you know.
Do you have an idea why it's running ahead?
Well, I think that the bushels are large enough this year that even if you do have 20% corn, it can still take a few gallons of propane to get that product dried. And so even though we went into the season here this fall thinking that, well, it's probably going to dry down fast, it has, but it's still using just a little bit more propane than last year.
And very quickly, we have maybe 20 seconds, seasonal price tendencies.
Well, there's some seasonal price tendencies here for a small rally into about mid-October, but then the seasonal price studies actually sell off into November and sometimes even into about mid-December. So from here on, we're starting to look for opportunities to start contracting for next year. So we'll be looking for those in the next month or two.
Thanks so much.
Thank you, Todd.
Harry Cooney is with GrowMark in Bloomington, Illinois. I'm Todd Gleason. You've been listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.